You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday, December 13th, 2024. Grandpa Dan wrapping up your work week. Streaming with you, RadioAlbion.com. I want to start right off with some technical, some updates, status updates, if we would. I did just recently hear from Dr. Johnson. He said he asked me to pass along to all of you that it's probably going to be another week before he's got his business wrapped up and he can get back on the air with us. So I do appreciate I know he appreciates, and I do as well, y'all's patience while he's been out of pocket. So we do look forward to him getting all caught up and being able to get back on the air. I know all of us, all of you and myself as well, we miss Dr. Johnson's content. Sven, I want to give you an update on Sven while I'm at it. He's continuing to do okay, doing everything he's got to do to stay within the requirements of his, what we would call, parole here in the U.S. Britain, they call it being out on license. You got a license for that to be out there, mate. He's continuing, though. He's doing okay and taking the opportunities he can, expanding into other interests and different things, you know, that he didn't have time before, to hobbies and things such as that. So, he's doing as well as can be expected, and I will continue to pass on any updates on his situation as time goes on. And just a reminder, because I do get asked from time to time, when might we hear from Sven again? And the honest answer to that is, I would say probably not anytime soon. He will be on parole for some time. And while he's on parole, I don't foresee that being something that could happen, just because he'd be setting himself up for problems, and obviously that would not be a wise thing to do. But he is continuing to do well, and we do all appreciate y'all's continued support. Now, I have been doing Fridays as sort of a week's stories, the week's news wrap up. Daily Nationalist, this was kind of the theme I've been doing here lately. And we'll kind of hit on some of this week's stories. I'm not going to focus on it as much as a week. I'm going to get into some other things. It kind of relates because it affects all of us. Because, I mean, we have the stories of this week, Syria, the fallout from the Syria business continues to unfold. Israel just is marching in and grabbing up land. And the crazy Islamics there, the jihadis who've taken over the country, don't seem to have a problem with Israel just bombing with abandon and taking over swaths of land in Syria. That might be shocking, I guess, for some people, not so much for the rest of us. The Trump stuff, I just don't really care that much. I find it humorous, and we're going to get into some of this, but I do find it humorous that, basically the idea, because it's undeniable, there's no secret that with Trump, this go around, Trump 2.0, as it were, we're definitely going to get all Israel all the time. I mean, that's basically, it's going to be a subsidiary of the Netanyahu administration. I mean, when it comes to Israel, and I don't really see anybody arguing that that's not the case. Basically, the argument is he's going to get some leeway here to do some things that might be positive on the domestic front, which may or may not be true. I don't know what people base that hope on. And I guess people would just cling to hope one way or the other. And I don't know, maybe there's nothing wrong with that. But I mean, the fact that nobody is really arguing against the idea that we're going to get an extension of the Netanyahu administration out of this Trump thing, especially when it comes to Israel, it really just, the argument is over about who owns, operates, and controls the government. I don't even, it's one of those topics I really don't even talk about it much anymore, because it's like, let's do a show on water being wet. That argument is over. And the fact that we know, you know, and the fact that we know we're going to get all Israel all the time out of this upcoming Trump administration, then it leads to, well, how's it really going to be different than the quote unquote Biden administration we just finished? Because they weren't exactly opposing Israel. They were there. They've been there defending them from the get-go, vetoing any UN resolutions and so on and so forth. So it's not really, I mean, I don't know how much more different it can be. I guess Israel will be even more brazen in what they do, if that's possible. One of the things that I find amazing is people's capacity to adapt to things that shouldn't be normal, just become normal. The fact that Israeli policy and American policy is indistinguishable from one another. And it's like, it's just normal. No one questions it. Nobody finds it strange that the policy of a foreign country and the policy of this country are essentially one and the same. And nobody questions it. It's just par for the course. But yeah, I guess people are hoping maybe we might get some sort of good stuff domestically that might give him some leeway in that. But again, it tells you what the power dynamics there are. We got continuing fallout from the CEO killing. You know, that story has still been in the news this week. And the whole story behind the arrest of this guy, it's ridiculous. I mean, the way I see it, you got two options. Either this isn't even the guy and they just basically have an actor here to play out a role so they can say, we got him. Or the other option is they use some highly illegal suspect spying means to track this guy down, and they don't want to admit to that. So they gave us this laughably absurd story about he was in this McDonald's wearing a mask and someone recognized him because of his eyebrows or something. And you have the whole killing was carried out with obviously some foresight and planning, and yet they arrest this guy and he hasn't ditched the murder weapon, and shows them the same fake ID that he used to stay at the hostel or whatever. And so that's of course led to, you know, people theorizing, because it's such a stupid thing. On the one hand, you look at how he carried out the killing with some amount of planning and whatnot, and then he doesn't have enough sense to get rid of the weapon. He doesn't have enough sense to realize, oh, well, I just show him my regular ID. I don't need to try to fake my way through this. They can't, as long as I keep my mouth shut, they can't prove I'm this guy. It's all very, I don't know. Like I say, I didn't want to spend a lot of time on this stuff. Y'all know these stories. But finally, I saw that the U.S. is back threatening Venezuela again. They're feeling their oats with the Syria thing. And so they're just issuing these threats to Venezuela. You gotta love how they go around and just threaten everybody in the world. Like it's their, and you're not supposed to, again, you're not supposed to question. This is all supposed to seem normal. They don't approve of the outcome of the Venezuelan election, and so you're deemed illegitimate. I always laugh because the media loves to use the term, you know, whenever somebody points out the truth, the media will use terms like they make claim without evidence. And yet the U.S. government does this all the time. They make claims that the Georgian election or the Venezuelan election is rigged and is illegitimate. Of course, they always make these claims without evidence. But that doesn't even matter. Not even supposed to notice. And if that isn't enough, they always make this unilateral claim. Not only do they just say, well, we don't know who won. You know, it'd be one thing maybe if they said, well, we think the election was sketchy and we don't know who won and we think it should be looked into or done over, whatever. But they don't. They always come out in unilaterally declare the other guy is the winner. Like they somehow know this. They somehow know this because of their omnipotent abilities. one of the most laughable instances of this was when they tried this crap in Belarus, and like the woman that they claimed was the real leader who won the election got like 2% of the vote. It's laughably absurd on its face. But it doesn't matter. They just go around threatening everybody and saying if they don't do what they want them to, then, you know, bad things are going to happen. Going to get the Venezuela treatment. Watching the media talk about, you know, Syria, boy, they're finally going to get the democracy values of who they are. And we all know this is already obviously heading towards Libya 2.0. You know, it's... Anyway, yeah, I care about these things. Yes, I'm interested in them, but what can I talk about it? You know, it's basically, this is all just obvious stuff that doesn't take any sort of really great insight. Now, what I did really kind of want to get into today, I just, like I said, I wanted to touch on those things. Those are news events, you know, events going on, so... You know, I feel obligated to at least touch on them. But let's talk about the news that affects everybody. You know, and that is the economy. And that is, you know, because it doesn't get all the headlines. And yet this is what actually affects us day in and day out. They continue to try to pretend that everybody is not poor. I sum it up when I talk to people and the economy comes up. I'll talk to people in real life and they'll get off on these and I just look at them and I say, well, nobody has any money. That is no matter what the topic, when it comes to the economy, and people point out this issue with the economy or that issue, this segment of the economy, that segment of the economy. And the answer, my basic go-to answer on this is the same, because it all boils down to is nobody has any money. You know, nobody's got... You're having this problem because nobody has any money. And so many people don't seem to grasp why that is, all of the different mechanisms. Now, I talked about how the media just mimics, you know, whatever the U.S. government says. Like, if truth tellers such as you or myself, we point out these obvious truths, and if the media talks about anything in that realm, they'll say, oh, these people are claiming without evidence, and yet the U.S. government makes these claims all the time without evidence. And nobody in the media ever says, well, the U.S. government is claiming without evidence that Maduro didn't actually win the election and this other guy somehow is the winner. Nobody knows. Nobody knows how the... Imagine if we had an actual independent media. They would say, well, the U.S. government didn't tell us how they know this other guy won, but they're just claiming they know this, which, because everybody would then laugh. And yet, you know, it's so obvious that the media and the government are one entity. Now, when you get into things with the economy, this also extends to corporate. One of the things I find so funny is people that still don't grasp. They're such naive children, bless their hearts, and they still don't grasp. There is no division between these corporations and the government and the media. They're all one entity. Our own Dr. Johnson, y'all know, he uses the term the regime to talk about. But they're all essentially one entity. They're all essentially parts of the same whole. They work together. And you see people, and they'll argue these different tangents. Some people will wind up essentially making the argument that these poor, innocent corporations are actually victims of the government. You see, if the government would quit meddling in the poor, victimized corporations, then they wouldn't have to keep ripping you off. I saw somebody make the argument the other day defending, talking about the United Healthcare, because our healthcare system is such a racket here in the U.S. And they made the argument, they're like, oh, well, yeah, y'all point to how much money the health insurance gives. They're only making 5% profit. Y'all don't even know. You commies don't even know. The poor, innocent health insurance company is only making 5% margins. That's pathetic. My gosh, they're not gouging anybody. These people, if they're making that argument genuinely, just, which is a leap of faith, but we'll say it. Let's say somebody is actually stupid enough, they're making that argument from they genuinely believe, because they saw a paper somewhere that shows an outfit like United Healthcare only operates on a 5% profit margin. They're not, obviously, these people probably give a bunch of money to these big charity organizations because, you know, they're nonprofit. Like, they don't even understand, like, if you look at a nonprofit, there's a good way to understand something like that, is you look at a nonprofit organization, and at the end of the year, they have to show no profit. So what do? Well, they pay themselves a bunch of money. That's how they show. They buy a big new fancy office building, so they ride all that at the end of the year. Look, we're not turning a profit. We're a nonprofit organization. And they don't grasp that a corporation, a healthcare outfit, like an insurance outfit like United Healthcare, does essentially the same thing. They know it's bad look if they're showing a, you know, 50% growth. Now, you look at how much their profits increased during COVID, and it's astronomical. Why? How did they do that? They don't. It's just simple bookkeeping gimmicks to where they can make it look as though, well, we're only operating. Look at poor healthcare companies. They're only operating on 5% margin. It's, you know, and the healthcare thing is such a... It's so bad here in the U.S. There's one of those things that everybody has to admit. Well, a few people don't, I guess. But most people, nobody can really deny in good faith that it's absolutely broken. And then you get into people arguing over, well, if it's broken, then how are you going to fix it? You want some kind of... Older people, boomers in particular, will argue about, you just want some kind of government-controlled health care. Boy, then you'll be in for it, commie. While they all have Medicare, which is essentially government health care. But not you. Don't get me wrong. I'm not arguing for government health care. You know, but especially not with this government. But to sit there and make this argument, if you just want more government-controlled health care, thank goodness I got Medicare, I'd be in trouble. What would you do if you had to pay for your own medical expense? Oh, I'd be in trouble, thank goodness, for keep your government hands off my Medicare. I remember those signs. Boomers standing out there waving their signs. Keep your government hands off of my Medicare. Oh, the RNA. The irony. I was thinking about this. You know, could people get into what? Well, you got all kinds of bitching and complaining, GPD. Let's hear some solutions. What do you suppose we should do to fix it? For starters, you would have to have the will to fix it. We're not going to have that. Why? Because, again, corporations and government are not separate entities at war with each other. I was thinking about this the other day. As you know, I'm poor. And because I'm poor, and I have had bouts of, over the last several years, I've had bouts of having to go into the hospital and such. And the only option I have, because see, I'm not poor enough to get Medicaid. I'm not that poor. But you, buying health insurance is a joke. And if you go in for a surgery, you're looking at $30,000, $50,000 or more. That paying it just myself, I'm poor. I can't write a check for that. So I have to do the Obamacare, which is what a lot of people do, Obamacare. And it's funny because when people will criticize or praise Obamacare, they usually do so with like zero understanding of what it is and how it operates. What they call Obamacare essentially is a government payoff to the health insurance companies. That's what it is. It's a racket subsidized. They say, oh man, that's Obamacare. That's government just propping people up for their health care. It's a subsidy to these people. These people getting this subsidized health care. Like you or me. If you're on it, like you're the one. No, I'm not getting the subsidy. On paper, you can make it look like that. But the subsidy is going to United Healthcare or Blue Cross Blue Shield or whatever one of these insurance companies. That's who's in on this. This is who's getting the money. So the way Obamacare works, because there's people that aren't on it, and they just hear people cuss it, they don't understand how it works, is depending on your income or lack thereof, the government will assign you a certain amount of, if you qualify, they assign you a certain amount of tax credit to cover your insurance premium. Now, you would think you qualify for the tax credit. That means you if you don't use it, you get it, but you don't. Now, say you qualify, sir, let's say, you qualify for, say, $800, $900 a month and the tax credit. Now, again, if you don't sign up for the Obamacare, you don't get that tax credit. It is one of those, if you use it, you use it. If you don't, you lose it. So you'll get $800 or $900 a month, just as an example, tax credit that is paid directly to the insurance company. You never see it. This isn't a reimbursement. You pay it and they give you the money back. It goes directly to these insurance companies. And virtually every single one of the plans that you get for this have, you're talking deductibles from anywhere from $7,000 to $8,000, $9,000, whatever deductibles. So the insurance company is making $900 a month direct from the government. And the vast majority of these policies, they're never going to pay a dime out on, because you're not going to be able to pay the deductible on a majority of them. So the health insurance company is raking in. We're going to use $900 just to pick a figure and stick with it. $900 a month is going to this health insurance company, and they're not paying anything out. Now, who's getting subsidized? Now, I was thinking, because people say, well, what do you propose? And it I thought of this literally within a few minutes while I was in the bathroom on the toilet. So it's not a well thought out plan. And even I can just taking a crap, I can think of something that would be more efficient and a better idea than this. What if the government gave this $900 a month credit, not to the insurance company, but to you, basically assigned to you as a taxpayer? You get this $900 a month credit assigned to you. And if you go to the doctor, the money that's put in that account, you don't have access to. You can't touch it. It's not like you can get in there and raid it. But if you go to the doctor, they basically send the paperwork to the government. The government pays them out of that fund. Because most of the time you go to the doctor, it's like $50 visit. You can pay that yourself. It wouldn't matter. And they pay it. And then at the end of the year, when you file your taxes, the money accumulated in that account in the name of this tax credit, whatever you didn't use, half of that, you can get that as a refund. And the other half, the government just keeps it and puts it back into the fund, or keeps it in your fund to keep piling up. Of course, we know the government spent it anyway, but you get what I'm saying. That would give people the incentive not to abuse it. They'd be like, well, I'm not going to use it on frivolous nonsense, because the less of it I use, the more I'll see that back as a tax, quote-unquote, refund at the end of the year. Now, let's say, okay, but you have to go into the hospital for a surgery. Well, the government would, if there wasn't enough money accumulated under your name on the books on that account, then the government would simply turn around and tell the hospital, you're getting that $900 a month until it's paid off. You know, if it takes 5 years, so be it. You're getting that per month until it's paid off. Now, obviously, in such a case, you're not getting any refund at the end of the year, because all of it's being used, because it's going to pay your hospital bill. Well, lo and behold, the government would be spending less money, because most people aren't going in the hospital. So the government would be spending, probably, just top of my head math, 30, maybe even 40% less per year than what they're spending now. People would not have to worry about becoming bankrupt because they're having healthcare problems. And yeah, the system would work much more efficiently by just simply cutting out the health insurance companies and their poor, humble 5% margins. Again, this isn't even a well thought out plan on my part. This is just something I came up with while taking a crap. And mine don't take very long. Oh, it's very complicated. These solutions, they're very complicated. No, they're not. They're just not wanting to fix it, because they're not in opposition to one another. Nobody understands. Very few people have any grasp of actually how the economy works, why it works the way it does, what our money is even based on, and how debt is the fundamental element of it. I'm not saying y'all don't, but most of the people you know don't. They don't even understand. It requires, this basically to, it's a usury-based system, or fractional reserve banking, however, whatever term you want to use, the bottom line is the same. The entire monetary system requires debt to continually to expand, because there's always more debt owed, because usury, because interest rates, because of interest, as because of this, there's always more money owed into the system then is in existence. So the only way for that to continue is for debt to continue to expand. This is why they fear. You always hear the Federal Reserve and stuff, they're always scared to death of deflation. They always will focus on inflation. They have a target inflation rate, which is BS. It's always much higher. But the one thing they are terrified of is deflation, because for you to have deflation, debt has to shrink. And that's the doomsday spell for this monetary system, because it requires debt expanding. How you get deflation? Well, if enough people default on their loans and banks have to eat it, that money is essentially destroyed because the debt is destroyed. The whole thing is based on debt. When you understand that, you understand why. You see, people go on. What I mean is people will go on about government getting its spending under control. The national debt is out of control because of all this wasteful government spending. But what they don't understand is that is not going away. I don't care who's in office, who you elect, what you care for. Why? Because the government is acting as the borrower of last resort. Remember, debt has to continue to expand or the whole thing collapses on itself. And the people are tapped out. What did I say before? Nobody's got any money. The people are tapped out. So the government is having to deficit spend because if they don't, the whole thing collapses. The government is making up the difference because people don't have enough money. They can't borrow any more money. They don't have it. They don't have it. And so the government is having to take on the debt to keep the debt expanding so that the whole house of cards doesn't collapse on itself. It's not because the government's just so frivolous in their spending. They just need to balance their books like the family balances their checkbook or whatever. They can't. If they do, the whole thing comes to a grinding halt because they can't expand it in the private sector anymore because everybody's tapped out. Nobody's got any money. Now, a person could be sitting there saying, Dan, what you're describing here is an economic system, a monetary system that is completely unsustainable. And my answer is yes. Yes, that's exactly right. That's why it's not going to be because Trump got in there. Everything's going to be okay now. When anyone tells me, well, now we got Trump in there, maybe this economy will turn around. I mean, some elements of it might get better because of different agendas are aggravating the situation. But you're not going to get some prosperity boom. Why? Because nobody has any money. And the debt, we're quickly approaching the limits of expansion for the debt. I mean, at some point in time, it's going to hit a wall. We're already down to the government being the borrower of last resort. You hear people use the term the lender of last resort. You know, when somebody ain't got no credit and they're desperate, they wind up going to a cash for title loan place or one of these predatory scams, you know, payday loan places. And they'll say they're so desperate, they're having to go to their lender of last resort, which are basically legalized loan sharks. But you see, you turn that on its head. The government is the borrower of last resort because they're the only ones left who can. All these different industries are suffering from it. One of the most blatant examples of this, if you follow anything, the goings on in the automotive industry. The automotive industry is because one thing it says America is we love our cars. We love our vehicles. Europeans will never understand that because it's just different. Y'all don't understand because we're a big country. You've got to have a car here. You're not going to get on no damn bus of diversity. You're not going to get on no bullet train. We ain't got none. You got to have a vehicle. You got to have cars. It's a big country. You're going to go anywhere. You're covering hundreds of miles. It ain't you just hop in your car and you go a few miles down the road. Well, for most of us, some people like in New York or California live like that. But the rest of us out here in the real world, we don't live like that. You got to have a vehicle. And we love our cars here in America. It's one of the things that just when you think of America, you think of guns, you think of cars, pickup trucks, love America bear. These sort of things. what you think about. And the automotive industry is in a lot of trouble. I essentially predicted this years ago. I'm not tooting my own horn, but I saw this coming years ago. I was saying years ago, I said, look, you know, and this was before the car industry was in trouble. I said, if these car makers could only sell cars, in other words, if financing didn't exist, and the only cars, vehicles, like new vehicles they could sell were to people who could walk onto the lot and write a check for them, they'd go out of business overnight because they were already overpriced decades ago. People talk now about this, the ails of the automotive industry, and they'll say, well, one of the problems is these vehicles are just too expensive now. Now. And so this is a new thing. No, they were too expensive a long time ago. But see, they could paper it over. You didn't go into a car dealer 10, even 20 years ago, 30 years, whatever. And nobody went into a, very few people went into a car dealership and haggled over the price. They haggled over the payment. What payment can you afford? And they work on getting you to that payment. And when you could buy it, I can afford $500 a month. I'm just pulled that out of the air. I can't afford $500 a month. Believe me, I ain't saying that. I can afford $500 a month. Okay, and they're going to sit here and see if they can get you to $500 a month, get you financed, get you out the door in your new car. You can't get a new car for $500 a month, by the way. Don't think you can. It ain't even close to that. You're probably two or three times that now, depending on the car you get. Nevertheless, you're getting a new car, but we're just using that number. $500 a month, and they're selling the payment. That person couldn't afford the car because they couldn't write a check for it, could they? Well, because of this, they just kept inching the payments up. In other words, they inched the price up, 20, 30, 40, 50, and the payments would inch up. Well, I can't, you know, I can't afford $600 a month. Well, can you afford $550? Yeah, I can squeeze that. Well, that $550, that extra $50 a month is because the price is going up. Where now we're in la-la land. You know, these mediocre quality crap vehicles are going for $50, $60, $70, $80, $100 plus thousand. No, not for some European exotic car. Just some soccer mom mobile. Take the kids to school. $110,000 or some shit. I mean, there's vehicles less than that. But the point is, they've expanded the price to the point now that nobody can afford them. They can't afford the payments anymore. Now what? You add in the EV nonsense. And the thing is, I follow some of this and I see people commenting on it. And they will go one direction or the other. They will say the poor car manufacturers are the victims of these government mandates. And then, or they will go to the other side and say these idiotic car manufacturers have blown up their own business trying to make too much money and they've priced everybody out of the market. They need to turn around and start making vehicles we can afford. And both positions are incorrect and correct at the same time. Again, they're not separate entities. The car manufacturers went all in, by and large, on this EV nonsense because they were counting on the government to mandate that you were going to have to buy one. That's what they're rolling the dice on. They didn't have a problem with it because they thought, just like the government mandated all these different forms of insurance, the government was going to mandate you weren't going to have a choice. It's EV or nothing. But because none of these people are nearly as clever as they imagine that they are, the EVs, they can't give them away. And when they do sell them, they're losing their ass on them. They're losing their ass because they can't sell them. And when they do sell them, they're losing their ass on them. So they turned around and the vehicles they could sell, they jacked up the price trying to make up the loss. And now nobody can afford them. And here we are. They're not separate entities. One of the best demonstrations of how these, just staying with the car industry. And I read about this. I read this take. God, it's been decades ago. It was probably over 20 years ago. I don't know. And I don't remember who it was because I'm remembering off the top of my head from like 20 years ago or some shit. But the illustration someone gave, and it was a really good one, and I guess obviously so because it's stuck with me all the years. The demonstration they used at that time of why these corporations that manufacture vehicles don't have a problem with these government mandates. Because it helps them corner the market. And the illustration this person used said, say you're very, very, very inventive, You're the modern day Henry Ford. And you look around and you say, I can build a better vehicle than these people, and I can build it cheaper. And so you set out, you buy your little factory space and you design a car, and you finish the design. It's affordable, dependable, high quality. You're ready to roll. And you're like, man, I'm gonna give me some investors. We're gonna roll. I am the Henry Ford of the 21st century. But you see, then the government comes along and says, well, that's all well and good, but before we even get into the emissions testings and the other garbage, we mandate that you crash, $70 million worth of vehicles to prove they can pass our ridiculous crash tests. Well, you're not going to have the money to crash $70 million worth of vehicles. And so, you see, it's a non-starter. The government, right, these corporations support it because it makes sure no Henry Fords of the 21st century are going to come around, because you can't afford just to do the testing. It stifles any chance of any sort of competition and gives them monopoly on the market. They're all one entity. They're not in competition with one another. They get their wire signal. Some of these people aren't nearly as smart as what they want all of you to believe they are. And so it doesn't work as smooth as they think it will, i.e. the EV nonsense. But they're not in competition with one another. That's why you never have seen, when have you ever seen the government mandate this ridiculous stuff for these vehicles manufactured? Because I'm using this as an example because it's one of the easiest to understand. But you can apply this same thing to literally every other activity, economic activity, when it comes to government and the corporations. When was the last time you ever saw the car manufacturers band together and push back and tell the EPA or whatever government regulatory agency, we can't do that and we're not going to do it? We'll go ahead and spend that money dragging you through court saying you don't have the right to mandate a law, essentially, from a government agency. We're just not going to do it. And if we do have to pay a fine, you know what? We're still going to make the cars that people want, and we're just going to put your fine on there as a line item and charge the customer for it, and then you can listen to your outraged constituents because they can't afford a freaking car, and it's your fault. It's never happened. Why? Because they're on the same teams, just like our politics. Team D, Team R, they're all on the same team. It's all part of the same scam. It's all part of the same gimmick. The vast majority of our economy now, the bulk of our economy, is based on some form of money scamming. Everybody's just trying to scam somebody. There's people trying to earn an honest living. But I'm talking about the big picture, the economy as a whole. The big money, okay? Let's put it that way. The big money that's getting moved around, that's driving the economy, it's just people scamming each other. Or scamming you. They're trying to figure out... We're all a bunch of sheep, and we're sheared down to the naked hide, and they're trying to figure out a way to pluck those last few bits of wool off around our neck. They don't care. We're all going to starve. Figuratively, we're all going to freeze to death in the winter because we ain't got no wool, because they won't let it grow back. There's a bunch of vultures picking at our bones. Because now we're at this point, this end point, where nobody's got any money. They do their sleight of hand tricks and this and that, but it's not going to change the fact. They can't change the hard underlying fact that A, the debt has to continually expand or the whole thing collapses, and B, it can't expand because nobody's got any money. Right now they can utilize the government to make it up, but at some point in time, that can't go on because the government would just on paper... They won't have the money to pay even the interest anymore and anything else. So that's a stopgap. It's a stopgap measure. They can change out politicians, which are just customer service reps. I talked about that on a show a while back. If you view your politicians as nothing more than the customer service reps whose job it is to pick up the phone and get griped at by unhappy customers, you see these things much more clearly for what they are. You can change out the customer service reps. They can tweak this policy, and the Fed can do this or that with interest rates. And it doesn't matter. Nobody has any money. They can't expand the debt. They're running into the limits of where they can expand the debt because nobody has any money. You can't change that. Nobody's got any money. At the end of the day, no man. Like if you ever get in financial straits and you got these bill collectors, like they calling you up, like you better pay us or else. And after a while, it might upset you at first, but after a while you laugh because it's like, well, you just tell them, well, I ain't got any money. You can do what you want to. It ain't going to change the fact. I don't have, we'll take you to court. They won't, but they'll tell you that. Because you see, they operate on the assumption that you do have money and you're just not wanting to pay. We'll take you to court. It's fine. But go to court. I'm going to stand up there before the judge and say, I don't have any money. Y'all can just argue this all you want to. You can threaten to put me in jail. Well, you can do what you want. But I still don't have any money. I still don't have any money. Nothing's going to change that fact. Y'all argue, say I owe it, and pound the table. But I don't have any money. And that's where we are. That is the economy in a nutshell. And yet people that don't understand any of this, they'll sit there and talk about, well, they just got to do this, or they just got to do that, and everything will be fixed. And it's not. They're all on the same team. The system is not sustainable. When you understand these things, these simple truths, all of this makes, all of it makes a whole lot more sense. I think we got to wrap up. I'm running way long here. But I think, too, a lot of this, you know, when people talk about the American empire, and I say it, too, you know, is collapsing. And is in steep decline. This is one of the fundamental elements of it. This is why you see a lot of this push by Israel to use the U.S. while they can, because they understand better than anybody that, you know, the system is reaching its end stage very soon, where the debt can no longer expand. And when that hits that wall, it's all going to come crashing down. The U.S. ain't going to be able to do anything. They ain't going to be able to go help expand greater Israel or any of the rest of it. So anyway, we're going to wrap up on that note. I appreciate you. I hope you enjoyed the discussion today. I know it really didn't wind up being a whole lot of topics as far as, you know, the week's news and review, just because today I wasn't very interested in that. And yet the economy is something that's news to us each and every day of our lives. So I do hope you got something out of it. I appreciate it. I hope you enjoy your weekend. I will be back Monday for the Monday installment of the Daily National. Assuming no big happenings happen over the weekend, I will be bringing back the Daily Mail Monday. It's always a fun show. I enjoy doing that way. Fun show. I'll be back on Tuesday with the Parish of the Patriots show. As I said at the beginning of this show, Dr. Johnson's telling me it's probably going to be another week before he can get everything back up and running on his end. So he will be back, and I know you're all looking forward to it. I apologize that all you've got to listen to is me. I know that can be, as entertaining as that is, it can be a little bit repetitive. So again, I thank you for joining us. Enjoy your weekend, keep the faith, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.